Cinnamon, where you gonna run to? Cinnamon, where you gonna run to? Where you gonna run to? All on that day.
Hello and welcome to The Breakdown, brought to you by The Nation Magazine and TheNation.com. I'm Chris Hayes, Washington editor of The Nation. Each week here on The Breakdown, we take your questions via Twitter at Chris L. Hayes or via email at TheBreakdown@TheNation.com. The way it works is this. You send us questions about what's perplexing you this week in Washington, and we try to break it down.
Will I run to the rock? Please hide me, I run to the rock. Please hide me, I run to the rock.
Hello, welcome back to The Breakdown, week 21, episode 21 in a collector series. This week we got a lot of questions about the continuing spill in the Gulf, but I wrote my capitalism column this week on that topic, so I decided to, for the first time, take the chair's prerogative as a host of The Breakdown and ask a question I myself want to know, that I've been paying some attention to, but nowhere near as much as my guest. The question is cap and trade dead? There's been a lot of activity around the climate bill the last few weeks, and one of the reporters who covers it best is my guest on the line, Kate Shepard. She is the environmental reporter for Mother Jones. Kate, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me, Chris.
Okay, so let me start this way. What are the prospects right now for getting a bill by the end of this Congress that has a carbon pricing mechanism? What are the prospects for that right now?
I would say that the prospects are fairly low from what we've seen in the past few days, but we could still see somewhat of a comeback here. In just the past few days, there was discussion about including a carbon cap in with a bigger energy measure and in with some oil spill specific legislation, things that might cut tax breaks for oil companies, raise the liability cap, all of these spill specific pieces. And the theory being, you know, you might get something that's not quite that popular, a carbon cap, if you include it with things that should be popular, which is, you know, punishing big oil in light of this huge disaster we have in the Gulf. But that was a talk as of late last week, and then this week we had, you know, the number three Democrat in the Senate, Chuck Schumer, suggesting that maybe a carbon cap would have to be offered as an amendment to another bill. And then we saw even more, the one Republican who was working on this bill then came out and said that he would actually vote against it. So we started seeing more and more, you know, walking away from the idea that a carbon cap would actually be included in anything this year, just in the past few days. There's, you know, a big meeting with Harry Reid this week where the committee chairs are going to discuss what they want in this big package. I mean, that will probably be a huge factor in determining what actually gets in this package. But I think for right now, the chances of that including a carbon cap seem pretty low.
It seems like we went through basically this framework for a climate bill. That was the three parties who were sort of pushing it were John Kerry, Jill Lieberman, and Republican Lindsey Graham of South Carolina. Now everybody's saying we're definitely going to have an energy bill, but it may not include a cap on carbon. And the key player in this seems to be Lindsey Graham. What has been going on with Lindsey Graham?
You know, last October, he and John Kerry wrote this big op-ed together saying, here we are, we're standing up together. We think climate change is a big problem. We think, you know, energy is a threat to our national security. We're united on this front. And then for, you know, more than 6 months, they worked together on a piece of legislation. Over that 6 months, we started seeing them take rhetorical steps back from the idea that this might include a cap on carbon or cap and trade, especially that they, you know, kept hearing Lindsey Graham say cap and trade is dead, cap and trade is dead. In reality, the bill that they put together, it does include some cap and trade. It just looks a little bit different than the House bill that passed last year. It's not really that much different. But, you know, you had Lindsey Graham out there bashing the idea of cap and trade, you know, every chance he got. You know, then it came down to the day that they were going to roll out this bill here in mid-April, and Lindsey Graham, you know, got all hot and bothered because he thought that Harry Reid might put immigration first. He just decided to walk away from this energy and climate bill that he'd been working on altogether. So now we have him not only walk away from it, but, you know, here in the last 2 days, he's decided that he now actually would vote against the bill that he helped write because it doesn't include, you know, any expansion of offshore drilling. And he, despite this whole disaster in the Gulf, he still thinks it should have an expansion. And he said he simply can't vote for anything that doesn't include that. And then yesterday we saw him taking an even further step back and actually now said that he doesn't actually think the climate change is that big of a problem. So, you know, we've seen him slowly backing away from something he seemed to be jumping in on, you know, last fall. And now it's basically, you know, he's not at all to be relied on to vote for this package, let alone work with Democratic leadership on it. And meanwhile, we haven't seen any other Republicans step forward who actually want to work on a serious bill. There's been a few pieces of legislation from Republicans, but it's not really anything that the Democrats are probably going to work on. So the possibility for bipartisanship on this issue has seemed to really disappear here in the last few weeks.
let's talk about two more Republicans who are sort of key players in this, and then talk about some of the Democrats. Lisa Murkowski, who is from Alaska, has been quite vocal in her criticism of anything that would infringe on the creator-bestowed rights of big oil companies. And she's proposed something that's going to come up for a vote Thursday, the day that you and I are speaking. What is Murkowski's gambit here?
Well, Murkowski's bill, she's using this kind of obscure procedural tactic which allows Congress to basically nullify an administrative decision. In this case, she is trying to nullify the conclusion that the EPA reached last year that climate change does in fact pose a threat to humankind. It's a scientific decision. They said, yes, you're right. Greenhouse gases, they're bad for people. They cause the climate to change, and it's bad for humans. This was a decision that came in response to the Supreme Court directive in 2007 that said to the EPA, you must decide whether this is a problem, and if you figure out that it's a problem, then you have to start regulating greenhouse gases under the Clean Air Act. So what her measure would do is basically say, EPA, we don't think your scientific conclusion is right. And, you know, it would essentially just kind of shelve the ability for them to use the Clean Air Act to regulate carbon dioxide. And that's really important right now because as Congress stalls on writing a new climate bill, the EPA is a backstop. It's basically the solution that we have kind of in the back pocket here should Congress actually not act. Murkowski keeps saying that it's not about the science. She's just trying to make a statement that Congress should act, not bureaucrats at the EPA, as she likes to say. When, you know, in reality, this is a scientific conclusion by a regulatory body that was directed by the Supreme Court. And Congress has had a lot of time to work on this. The Supreme Court decision was back in 2007. We're in 2010 now, and Congress really hasn't done anything. And Murkowski being one of the chief people over there who has pretended to care about climate change, she says she cares about it, but she actually hasn't done anything. You know, so now the big action from the Senate might well be to, you know, nullify a regulatory decision.
Is that likely to pass the Murkowski bill?
It might be a close vote. The one thing about this obscure procedural maneuver, it's, you know, part of the Congressional Review Act. It only requires a simple majority, so you only need 51 votes, and it can't be filibustered, which makes it, you know, easier to pass than most things in the Senate these days. There's 41 co-sponsors right now. It's including her. But a few other Democrats have made noises that they might support it as well. Blanche Lincoln, Mary Landrieu, Ben Nelson, have all said that they would support it. This week we had Jay Rockefeller come forward and say he would support it. In the past, Jim Webb has said that he could support it as well. So we could have five Democrats, possibly more, supporting it, which could actually put her over the top or at least make it a really close vote. In the very least, it would be a very bad sign to see so many Democrats voting for something like this. Murkowski said that she just wants to send a message, and if she gets a bunch of Democrats on board, it does send a message, and it's not a good one.
So in terms of the other key players, I mean, it seems like Dick Lugar, senator from Indiana as well, who's a Republican, and Susan Collins, senator from Maine, who's a Republican, they both seem to support some kind of climate legislation. Is that no longer operative?
Well, Lugar yesterday introduced his own package. I wouldn't call it climate legislation. It's an energy bill. Mostly it relies on expanding nuclear power and improving fuel economy standards, which, you know, improving fuel economy standards is definitely a good thing, but his bill doesn't have any actual cap on carbon. But, you know, people are taking that as a sign that Lugar might engage. Who knows? You know, it's possible that he could still engage. He's actually somebody who has voted for things in the past and does care about the issue. You have Susan Collins in Maine, who's co-sponsored a bill with Maria Cantwell of Washington that, you know, it's more of a cap and dividend approach, but she at least has signaled engagement and does want to cap carbon. So there are still a few Republicans who might be amenable to working with Democrats on a bill this year. But right now they're kind of out there floating these different plans, but are really not engaged on what seems to be the main core bills that the Democratic leadership has put forward.
Is there any sign of good news here? To editorialize for a moment, watching this just from afar, you cover this every day incredibly well, along with, I should give a shout out to Dave Roberts at Grist, who's also been doing remarkable work on this, and we'll link to him on the website. I mean, watching this from sort of one step removed, it just seems like a maddening situation and outrageous. And I just am wondering if you can give us any sort of light at the end of the tunnel.
Well, I think, you know, not to use the oil spill as a light, it's obviously a disaster, but in the past, the biggest environmental reforms have come after disasters. We formed the EPA, we passed the National Environmental Protection Act right after the Santa Barbara oil spill, which is 1969. Those are the two landmark bills of the early 70s. You know, in 1990, we passed the Oil Pollution Act, and we also passed the Clean Air Act, you know, shortly after the Exxon Valdez. These were huge steps forward on environmental protection. So, if this horrible disaster could be used as momentum, if it can create, you know, incite the public to really demand real action from senators and actually incite senators to deliver that action, you know, we could see a lot this summer. I don't really think we've seen that public outpouring yet, but, you know, as this disaster continues to grow worse, maybe people will start to care, and maybe they'll start to, you know, engage more, and maybe we'll see Congress actually respond. I mean, it's really about building that pressure and momentum to act. Right now, I don't think senators are feeling it.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I mean, I think ultimately public outcry is going to be the thing that pushes us over the top if we get it. And since the fate of the world hangs in the balance, all you listeners out there should be doing some outcrying. Kate, thanks so much for taking the time.
Thanks so much for having me.
The Breakdown is a weekly production of The Nation magazine and TheNation.com. New audiocasts are posted each Friday at TheNation.com and available in iTunes. The Breakdown was produced by Eric Nang and yours truly. Senior producers at The Nation are Emily Douglas and Ben Wiskito. Comments and feedback should be sent to TheBreakdown@TheNation.com.
Oh, Cinnamon, where you gonna run to? Cinnamon, where you gonna run to? Where you gonna run to? All on that day.